Today's program has been brought to you by TechServe, New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. For more information, visit TechServe.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. We talk about music. With musical dudes. Finger on the pulse. Snacky tunes.
Hello. And welcome to the Human Institute. It has long been our dream to find the perfect way for people to achieve simply happiness, contentment, inner peace. These seem to be things that strangely elude us all. But it doesn't have to be that way. We at Human have found a path to achieve them. Here at the Institute, we are at the forefront, worldwide, in neurosonic psychology and new therapeutic audio technologies. Diesel Boy, our head of research, and our dedicated team of engineers and naturopaths and healers have found a way to make that dream a reality. A reality. A reality. Through our unique blend of benign pharmacology, sensory therapy, base manipulation, and energy sculpting, we can guide you gently along the path to a new, better, happier you, all in the comfortable surroundings of our state-of-the-art facility. We invite you to join us and find out for yourself.
Is it? Greg, hashtag Raven or Behaven?
Definitely Behaven. It's Monday. It's 2 Monday. O'clock. 2:09.
2:09.
So maybe if we were in London, I would be.
That was Raven. Just a little bit off of Beyond the Black Baseline.
It's a mouthful.
By Diesel Boy. Who finally welcomed to Snacky Tunes. It's taken effing forever.
Thank you. It's exciting to be here. Very exciting.
And we also have two returning legends. Photographer Daniel Krieger.
Hello.
Also hat wearer Daniel Krieger.
And mustache.
And mustache twirler.
Former game show winner.
How often do you twirl your mustache?
Disgusting.
Constantly. Not constantly. Maybe like 30, 40 times a day.
He runs his fingers through on his tongue like this. Like he's licking an envelope and then does a little.
Thank God this is radio and not TV.
That sultry voice is newly crowned blonde bombshell Jordana Rothman.
Hi guys.
Who's working a Ruthie the Riveter look today?
Ruthie.
I think I got that.
Rosie. Yeah. Rosie.
Ruthie is the shtetl version.
She's the Jewish, the not so well known.
Yeah.
And maybe you come and join the war effort.
Yeah.
I'm one half your host. I'm Darren Bresnitz.
Greg Bresnitz. You're doing great. Just on a roll.
I don't think I've ever seen that chair in the studio today that you're sitting on.
I brought it from home.
Oh, very nice. We're really excited because we hung up a lot of artwork. Thanks, Mom. Shout out to Mom. Shout out to our cousins who are getting married next weekend. Jesse, Jessica.
Not our cousins. One cousin.
Yeah. One cousin.
Because this is also not the 1900s where it's like, they're two villages away. No one will know. It's totally
fine.
He's
going to become our cousin, right?
Are your parents cousins?
No.
Different shtetls. Anyway, so Jessica and Jesse, we went to this really obscure Jewish ceremony, the Arfruf. It's like second. You knew it?
Oh, yeah.
We asked a lot of Jews. We surveyed 100 Jews.
I even asked and one Jew said daughters.
The Arfruf.
It's like the second bar mitzvah.
Listen, I'm apprised of all of this.
Nikki didn't know what it was?
I was probably butchering it.
The Afruf, that's what it's called.
Afruf, yeah.
Afruf.
I always think it's like a dog ceremony. Like Jewish dogs.
But there was no candy throwing in it, because I thought there was supposed to be.
There was supposed to be candy throwing. I'll tell you this.
You know, that can actually end in tragedy.
Yeah. So. Don't you remember, we won't say, but there was a kid that we grew up with who was bar mitzvahed, and they threw candy and he started crying because I got hit too hard.
That's not tragedy, though.
Is that Daniel?
No, not Daniel.
Daniel was never bar mitzvah, but he got kicked out of Hebrew school.
Really? Yeah. What was your bat mitzvah theme?
Broadway.
Get out. It was
Jordana's Saturday matinee, and we still have these. My parents got someone to paint playbills, like from Gypsy, and, you know, as you can imagine.
Wait, was it a bat mitzvah or a bat mitzvah week?
It was probably a week. I mean, let's be honest. Right. I was demanding.
Jordana does a whole birthday week.
Long-term celebrations from the age of 12.
So we brought everyone back in, and we brought Diesel Boy in for the first time, because Diesel Boy is not only a world-famous, renowned DJ, he's also a lover of food and a founder of the Hellfire Club with Mr. Krieger.
Oh, yes.
Hellfire
secret,
Club in the house.
Secret society.
Secret society.
Not secret anymore.
Well, I've been lucky enough to attend, but I won't say where we've attended or what we've done.
But I haven't been lucky enough to attend, so I don't really understand what's going on here.
That's because you don't return emails, Greg.
Whoa!
I don't think I've ever gotten an email from you, Greg.
You did when you responded, there he is.
So we're here today to talk trends. This isn't our official year, looking back, year looking forward, that we do in February with Jordana, which is a very intense...
Vitriolic.
Yeah, but we're here to talk about midsummer break. What's going on? You know, it's the August is sort of when the months in New York, like sort of the slowest food months, so we take a time to look backward, look forward. And I guess really the biggest food trend, which I couldn't believe today, the line is over at Cronuts, which I'm going to say this right now. I wouldn't wait.
I wouldn't wait either.
Have you tasted one?
No,
because I won't wait, or I won't pay like a guy on Craigslist like $50.
Wait, have you had one?
What's that?
Are you staring at
What's
me?
That?
Oh, we have some. Serious? We have some.
We have
studio.
Cronuts.
I brought a box of Cronuts.
Croconuts.
Oh!
It's coconut. We got the coconut one.
Don't shake those Cronuts.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay. So for those who've been living in Iraq, are you serious?
I'm totally serious. I went.
That is a fancy box.
Well, it actually, it's really, it is. You can't see it, but it opens up like a blossom, which I think is appropriately dramatic.
Should we light some candles? What? Should we light candles?
All right. So, Jordana, why don't you take people through what a cronut is?
Okay, so a cronut is it's a hybrid Franken food. It's a cross between a croissant and a donut.
Oh my God.
It's, you know, flaky and layered, but also fried and rolled in sugar. Oh, Daniel just opened it. It's like pornographic in here. Wow. It's like Daniel is radiating just like red heat, and everyone's got their cameras in his crotch where the box is. It's really.
I think something's right, oozing out of the box.
The pastry chef is Dominique Ansel, who was pastry chef at Daniel for many years and then broke off and opened his own namesake bakery, Dominique Ansel Bakery, which is in Soho. And, you know, he came up with this. He just struck gold with this food, and people have just gone completely nuts. It's been on Fallon. It's been
the amount of butter that they put into that on Fallon was crazy. When he laminates it,
should I just put this right here?
Yeah, yeah.
It's, Wait, can we eat one?
We
can eat one right now. So So they're best when they're cut with a serrated blade because it maintains the layers. You know. But so two of them are sliced in half with the serrated blade, and two of them are not. Right, and these are the croconuts. And I have to tell you, like, oh, Jesus, I can't even get my Instagram shot because all of you.
I mean, I'm just going to do
this. Oh, people are looking outside. All right, here we go. Croconuts.
Okay. So what do you guys think?
Well, I'm going to give it a go.
Delicious.
So, and it's actually piped. So inside of, so if you cut it in half, it kind of looks like a croissant, but then it has this creamy feeling inside of it, too.
Wait, so how did you get these?
Wait. Hey, can you leave that one half and eat that one? I'm going
to
photograph.
A lot of photographs going on.
Daniel Krieger, really, New York Times food photographer, needs his money shot.
But since someone's got to cut it in half for me, so that's nice. But
I'm dripping insides.
So, you know, it's this really divisive kind of food stuff because on the one hand, you know, it's like obviously delicious, as all of you are discovering. I mean, I'm just talking by myself in a room right now. All of you are you're just all eating donuts.
Huh.
But you know, people are waiting on like 3-hour lines for it. They're like lining up in the morning, and you know,
it's like the Russian bread line.
Someone pitched an actual tent outside, like not a boner, like an actual tent outside the bakery this morning. So it was pretty insane, but you know, it couldn't have happened to a nicer guy because Dominique Ansel is like, you know, I people ask me what I think of it, and it's like, first of all, like, my mom found out about it independently, like, which my mom doesn't, like, know about food trends. Oh, she just, God. Like, she was like, oh, cronuts are, like, the big thing right now. But, you know, he's not just, like, a novelty seeker, you know? He's, like, a really talented guy with really amazing instincts around pastry, and he happens to have struggled.
You want to take a bite? Take a bite on, you're losing icing. You're losing icing.
I can't take a bite. Someone else talk.
That's really,
I mean,
good.
It's surprising. I you know, I trying to think about what it was going to taste like. It's surprisingly way more donut-y than I thought it was going to be. I mean, it's
yeah,
especially chewy. I like this. It's got a nice,
I mean, nice, it's okay, here's
it's
what
chewy,
here's,
crispy.
Here's the bigger question. Why is it so big?
Wow. These are real, this is really good.
I mean, I know it's really good, mm-hmm, but there's a lot of really good pastry in New York. Is it just like, is it the fact that they're in limited supply? Is it the fact that just like it's a new type of pastry?
I think it's because it's limited supply and new. I think it's both. I mean, if it was easy to get those, I mean, think about it. A hot crispy cream glazed is as good as that, in my opinion. Like,
no, this is better.
We have to disagree.
I think also Americans like kind of over the top things, and like the KFC double down. Whenever you do a combination and add fat and calories into something, I think Americans kind of get really excited and crazy.
Speaking of KFC, they did a knockoff in Japan.
I can tell you that. I mean, I feel like New Yorkers in particular, like, we love our sort of like one off food stuff, you know, like we love the thing that we can eat that's not necessarily like a meal, but is, you know, it's like, think about like when the Momofuku bagel bomb like first came out, or like, you know, basically anything that you can eat at Smorgasburg, like these like little things that you can kind of sneak in between your meal and are clever and, you know, made responsibly, I suppose, and, you know, and are interesting and are sort of like Instagram bait, that kind of thing. I think New Yorkers really respond to that.
How I like that term, Instagram bait. By the way, like, they interviewed, what's the guy, the chef's name again? The pastry chef?
Dominique Ansel, who's like the loveliest.
He was like, and even this interview like a few weeks ago, mm-hmm, he's like, I'm already over and I'm on to the next thing.
Well, and he's so inventive, and that's the thing. So everyone, so Dominique has sort of like powered onto the, you know, into like mainstream consciousness with this particular item, but he's been plugging away and doing amazing work for over a year at Dominique Ansel. He has this other, I mean, he has the DKA, which is a take on the Kugiyaman, which is a Bretonian mm-hmm. specialty, which, Darren, you're very familiar with because your girlfriend smuggled an entire one over the border in Montreal with
she did.
On
in
our
her
road
stomach
trip.
Or in her suitcase.
Her stomach suitcase. she brought it back for research purposes,
and then ate the entire thing in one night. As I recall, is how that played out.
I love the research. Like, but, can I eat all of this in one night? Yes.
But you know, I mean, even just to go to the bakery, we went to pick them up around noon today, and I placed an order, but even just to go to that bakery is such an amazing experience. I mean, he's such a classically trained, you know, he's an artisan. I mean, if you just like look at the case, it's so magnificent. You don't really see pastry like that anymore.
He's got that frozen s'more. That's his new thing. It's
cooked. Yeah, we tasted one today.
On that stick.
Can you imagine what it must have been like?
I got my lipstick all over it.
Where he was just like, oh, hey, I'm workshopping this new thing. I think we call it the Cronut. Do you want to just test it out? You imagine just being one of like the first customers.
Yeah,
the hype behind
maybe for the customers, but I'm sure that they have shut there. They're like the 30th iteration where they're like, all right, we got it. It's a donut. It's a croissant. We got it.
It's so good.
I had actually tasted them before. I have tasted one before. This time, it's actually like completely sublime. Last time, I really liked it, but I wasn't totally blown over. I think this time, it's really insanely good.
How long do you think the line's going to last? Or is it just like this New York institution now?
Well, Daniel and I were discussing that today. It's like, is it a thing that's going to die out? Or is it like the new Magnolia cupcake kind of thing? Where it's going to just, this is our life now. This is the new reality.
Yeah, but Magnolia, is that still a thing? I mean, do people line up?
I don't know if there's as much of a line as there used to be,
it's
but there's still
a thing.
It's like, it's become a tourist destination, right. So it's like written up in like every book. I mean, I think it's going to be going on for a while with him. If I was him, I'd open up, he should open up like a cronut store in like Midtown. I think it would just kill right now.
Do you think
cronuts?
That like, just cronuts. Can you imagine like coming to New York the first time, growing up, thinking about it? And then whoever was like, oh, we just want to stop by and get, like, just a pastry. Like, it'll be real quick. And then first half of your day is just totally, and like, you're so angry.
Yeah, you do two things. You go to the Rain Room and you get a cronut, right? And that's it.
Well, and did you see that he had a photo of a cronut inside the Rain Room? It's like it's a mashup.
Are you serious?
It's a meme mashup, yeah.
That's amazing.
But I think I say we cheers Dominique Ansel for his success.
Yeah. Cheers.
He's a talented guy. And
yeah, that's delicious.
It. Cheers.
Amazing. So you guys just got back from Tales of the Cocktail, right?
We did, yeah.
You guys look very good for just coming back from Tales of the Cocktail.
Well, you had like a week to detox,
we had a
too,
week
right?
to recover, yeah.
Yeah, I'm coming off a 3-day juice cleanse, so I'm at the top of my game right now.
For the six people listening to Heritage that don't know what Tales of the Cocktail is, please explain to them.
Right, so Tales of the Cocktail is an annual festival in New Orleans. It's actually, this was its 11th year, so it's grown exponentially every single year. Daniel and I have been going for six, and it's basically just a congress of the world's most sort of successful and interesting and inventive and progressive bartenders, producers,
writers,
of course, producers. Like, so, you know, if you're going to taste something new, if someone's coming out with a new expression of a whiskey or something, you're going to taste it there first.
Ooh, I like that. New expression of a whiskey.
That's right. So it's really, it's kind of, there are a lot of cocktail weeks around the country. There's Portland Cocktail Week. There's a few, but Tales of the Cocktail is still sort of like the big bad.
It's like a real booze hounds, yeah, booze fest.
So you go to seminars during the day. Well, I do. I wake up early and go to classes because I like to learn things.
I like to wake up and just start drinking down there. You can literally drink all day long for like a week straight. It's pretty crazy.
I mean, you can do that.
And then
there's
parties. Yeah, there's parties at night.
Yeah. What were some? Did you host anything? Did you do any parties?
I did. Well, I did a seminar. About basically bartenders and the media, so how that relationship should look and best practices kind of stuff. I mean, it's not interesting unless you're a bartender, but I think I did well. It was good. It was fun.
What's a piece of advice you gave?
We talked a lot about, like, you know, it's just interesting because I think that in food writing, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, charlatans and bullshit artists and food writing too, but you know, there's a codified understanding about what the best practices should ideally look like in food writing. So, you know, if you, so there's an understanding, you know, don't accept comps, you know, don't use your position to attain special treatment, you know, that kind of thing. There's a understood expectation of ethics, even if they're not necessarily abided by. But in cocktail writing, I think it's relatively new, and I say that, you know, sort of like tongue in cheek, because of course cocktails aren't new, but treating them as a culinary art form and writing about them as something that's a culinary art form is new. And as a result, I think that there's not really the same codification. I think that bartenders don't really know how to relate to the media. They don't know, and a lot of the cocktail writers are sort of young and, you know, bloggy types without necessarily, you know, expense budgets and things like that. So basically just sort of talking about that.
How to put some like rules into the industry so it stays honest.
How to as a, you know, as myself as a writer, you know, how to the standards that I hold myself to, and then also you know, as bartenders, you know, dealing with some of the pratfalls of navigating what can be a kind of complicated world, and also holding yourself to a similar level of ethical practices.
Daniel, did you get some good photos down there?
Yeah, I usually shoot a few events when I go down there. So I shot a couple things, and then I just pretty much have my camera with me all the time, and I'm just walking around catching stuff. Like, I think, doesn't Damon Balti have a show here? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I have one of my favorite shots that someone just, and this is a typical scene at Tales of the Cocktail, somebody just whipped out a bottle of Fernet and just started pouring shots in people's mouths on the street. Yeah. And I got a good shot of Damon just getting a...
It's called a layback.
A nice...
Is that what it's actually called?
Layback.
A shot from the bottom to the mouth?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good old Damon. He loved
it. I would actually love to see any documentation of that. Yeah, Jordana, you say things with such authority. You're like, oh, yeah, that's what it's called. I think people have said that. He looks pretty written on a website that I might have written.
Listen, in a year, you'll all be saying it. Like, if I came in here 3 years ago and I said, oh, that's called a pickleback, you'd be like, that's not a thing. And then a
but
year
what
from
is
then,
a thing are tiki drinks, am I right?
Stop it.
The gloves are on. The gloves are on for this.
It was a thing. I never, when I come in and do my trend forecasting, I never say that those things are going to last forever.
Just a cheap shot to reward our listeners who've been listening for a number of years.
You're argumentative.
Who are in on that joke.
Argumentative.
Yeah. Diesel, you just got back. Well, this is like a pit stop for you, right?
This week, definitely.
Like today. Like you're in New York for like 12 hours, right?
Yeah, I was in Orange County on Thursday night, and then Friday I flew to a festival outside of Cleveland there's like a rapper named Machine Gun Kelly who I'd never heard of before, but he's got this like very serious following of kids. The vibe's kind of like Juggalos but no face paint, so it's kind of a weird scene. It's kind of a weird
scene.
Then
how do you know they're Juggalos?
It's just the vibe.
Yellow Wolf, right?
Kind of, yeah. He's like a skinny white kid, tattoos. So I played this festival. It was pretty interesting because I was DJing. I guess they asked some people to set up a party on Friday. He was performing on Saturday, and I showed up. It was a lot of his fans, and then there were some like rave kids. So I finished DJing. I thought, you know, people seem happy, and I thought I'd been playing for the ravers the whole time. But then some kid jumped on stage and started doing some chant that has to do with Machine Gun Kelly, and I realized I'd been playing to his fan base, and they were kind of into it. So for me as a DJ, it was pretty awesome to play for somebody that's not my fan base or not people that would be into dance music, and they actually kind of appreciated it. So
how does that chant go?
It said it was EST. What the fuck? Can I say that on there?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was basically just EST, what the fuck. They would chanted that for like 5 minutes and stopped and chanted it again. It was very odd. And then Saturday I went down to Puerto Rico for like a small festival, or actually it was like a big outdoor party. And I had a chance to eat at Jose Enrique, which is one of Food & Wine's magazine's best new chefs, from like a month ago. And it was a recommendation from my girl Jordana.
How was it?
It was really good. The thing that was odd, though, considering the guy has got such fame in Puerto Rico, is that his restaurant is very kind of ghetto-ish. I mean, like peeling paint kind of vibes. I mean, it's in the middle of like kind of the strange area of San Juan. But the food was really good. The show was really fun. And then I flew home yesterday, and I was supposed to fly to Kiev for a festival by the Black Sea called Kazantip, but I managed to change my flight so that I could have a cronut and hang
that's
out.
That's how powerful the cronuts
and me,
are.
And me and be in the same room as Greg Bresnitz, which is...
They're actually Damien's birthday cronuts.
They are my birthday cronuts.
Oh, when's your birthday?
You've been eating... Well, it was my birthday. I'm having a birthday month. It was July 24th.
Okay, and that's fine.
Is he out birthday celebrating Jordana Rothman?
No.
That's impossible. It's impossible.
That is not possible.
Don't throw down the gauntlet.
No. But then tomorrow I'm flying to Ukraine. I get in literally like in the evening and then fly out in the morning. So it's going to be like less than 12
that's
hours.
Crazy. It's not do you get to eat a lot of good food on the road?
I do, actually. That's the thing. When I was DJing, before I really got into food, when I was DJing, I realized a lot of the cities I played, I'd come in, it was nighttime, I'd go to the hotel. Every city kind of seemed the same.
Right.
So when I got into food, I realized that by going to different restaurants in different cities, I could kind of get a taste of that city. So now it's kind of my thing where...
Do you make the promoters take you? Like, I mean, it's much easier than, like, if you were a band, you're just like, hey, like, take me to a meal.
No, I mean, sometimes when the promoters I'm friends with, they want to go. I mean, I'm kind of known for being the food guy, so a lot of the times I'll just take myself. I don't want to rely on promoters because they'll take me somewhere that's probably pretty whatever. Like, I don't want to go to, like, fancy restaurants.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that's – I like to travel and eat, except when I'm in Russia. The food there is – no offense to any Russian listeners that are not listening, but – the food is terrible.
Ruthie the Riveter just got upset.
Yeah.
Well, the food that I'm... Yeah,
I mean, is it really across the board? Or is it just like...
Maybe I've gone to the right places.
Is it just one of those things where the food in Russia is that there's no in between?
Well, going to my house.
It's weird. Like, if you try to go get nice food, unfortunately, not... I mean, I'm not trying to generalize, but a lot of the food in Russia, like the higher end stuff, just the whole vibe of the places you go and just the whole service and everything is extremely fucking tacky. And it's... I mean, no offense to Russia, but anything... And then the other stuff is like just... I don't like boiled food. I mean, it's just like food that I just really wouldn't want to eat on a day-to-day. It's my thing. No offense.
I was just down in Panama and all like the high-end stuff, stuck in the 90s, totally.
Oh, totally.
But all the street food and those things, like that was really great. Mm-hmm. Like, is there any option of that in Russia where it's like a dumpling stand somewhere, pierogies?
I mean, I'll tell you what I eat a lot of. There's cherries are really big in Russia, cherry-flavored things. And I get these Danon cherry yogurt drinks that has like a picture of wheat on it. So I think there's some kind of oatmeal or grain in there. I mean, I guess not oatmeal, but some kind of grain. But I get those. And actually, it's funny. The last time I was in Kiev, I stopped at this roadside grocery market to buy some cherry yogurt drinks. And these two old women were behind the counter. And they added me up on an abacus, not a calculator or a cash register. It's an abacus. First time I've ever seen one used. Been a real business.
Like, so. In
real life.
Like,
not just
one,
a picture in a book.
1 second.
I was like, what are they? Oh, my God. They're using an abacus to ring me
what
up.
What about caviar?
I don't like caviar.
Vodka.
I mean, that's what
vodka is not a food. But if you go to the grocery stores, there are vodka aisles. There are so many brands of vodka that you just will never see here.
There's an incredible article years ago in the New Yorker that talks about Russia and vodka and just like how there's thousands upon thousands and how it's like.
Oh, yeah.
Everything from moonshine to all the way, you know.
Oh, yeah. You could just go to, like, a tiny bodega, like a Russian bodega type thing, and you'll find, like, 50 different brands of vodka just in a bodega. I mean, they're really into it.
Yeah. It's really hard to refine Russian food, too. I'll definitely say that. Like, there was that attempt to do it in the space that's now Betany. What was it called, that restaurant?
Oh,
there's locations of it.
Isn't
in
Maria Vanna or something. There's another place.
That actually is not so bad. But
Uncle Vanya's Soup Kitchen.
No, but that place, the word Betany is that the people that own that, they own a bunch of restaurants in Russia.
They own the restaurant that was in that space before is the restaurant.
It wasn't Maria Vanna.
It was not Maria Vanna. It had a different name. I can't remember. But at any rate, it's on 57th Street. But they actually kept all of the like incredibly tacky Russian interior. For the new restaurant.
I mean, I feel like so much in New York now. I mean, like Carbone's a great example of that. About these people who are just like keeping. I mean, Carbone's not the best example, but I think like the places that sort of like take these old spots and then put sort of new menus in them and then try and sell on like the nostalgia.
But that would be Carbone, though.
Okay, well.
Well, Carbone, I mean, look, I went there, I ate there, it was great. It's just like, it's just really expensive. Like, I don't think you can talk about the restaurant without talking about the price and what it actually is.
I have to tell you, I have really strong feelings about this particular topic and all.
That's surprising.
All topics.
The vein, there's a vein pulsing on you.
You know what? I would love to find the one topic where you're just like, I feel fine.
I feel medium about that.
I feel medium.
Well,
wait, which, what, Carbone or just like the...
Well, no, I mean, actually, I think Carbone is actually... Well, let's not talk about Carbone, okay. But I'll tell you, you know, I have a strong reaction to places that I feel are, you know, historic restaurant spaces that are being co-opted, poached, basically, by restaurateurs. The iconic, authentic history of the place is cleared out, and it's replaced by this sort of, you know, simulacrum version of itself that's been scrubbed of all of its charm. And, you know, they're just basically taking our own history and selling it back to us at a, you know, 150% markup. And I find that to be absolutely vile and disgusting.
Okay.
And,
you want to name some names?
I do want to name some names. Uh-oh.
She's got a list.
The shit list.
Well, I, for a little while I was acting as the restaurant critic for Time Out New York in the interim. And I reviewed Bill's Gay 90s, or rather, excuse me, Bill's Food and Drink. It was rechristened by John DeLucy. And I really feel like that was just an abysmal, I mean, I just think that's carny shit and we are the fucking rubes. I just think that's disgusting.
Well, are we the rubes? Or
those restaurants are not made for you and I. They're made for a certain...
Yeah, and you know what's
going to
happen?
And they enjoy
those
going
places,
to them.
Bill's Gay 90s was one of the great old bars in New York City. It had a personality that nothing else in New York City continues to have. It was an amazingly special place. We saw it off. We had an Irish wake there the night before it closed. We had an amazing dinner there, and there was a piano player, and we drank shitty whiskey on chipped ice, and it was just like the best night. It was fantastic. And I don't think that every single place has to be scrubbed clean and made into a fancy place with $20 cocktails. I just don't believe that that's necessary. And Bill's Gay 90s, that's exactly what happened. It was an iconic space. It was scrubbed clean. It's now this just like clubby bullshit place with expensive food and ridiculous cocktails. And I love craft cocktails, don't get me wrong, but I really, you know, I don't think that every place has to have, every place that doesn't fall in line with that trend needs to be destroyed or saved from itself. I don't buy that.
So do you think it would have been better just for it to fold and have some totally new thing in there?
Well, because what actually happens is that it's going, because it's, those places are not built to last. You know, those like sort of like club, it'll stay open for a few years. You know, it's going to have like a banker, a midtown clientele. It's going to stay open for a few years and then it's going to close. And then it's just another old restaurant space that's just like on the market in New York City, and we've lost it, you know? And it's like when you're going through these periods and you're losing these spaces, you don't realize what's lost until 20 years down the road and you look back and you say, what the hell happened to, you know, the old Penn Station? Or, you know, what happened to all of the beautiful old, you know, French dinosaurs that used to be in Midtown? What happened? Yeah, it happen.
But are you going and eating there?
I am going and eating there. I have an entire club that's dedicated to going and eating at those places. But
what's the name of that club, by the way?
Well, there's two names. I call it Dinners of Yesteryear. My co-host calls it the New York Landmark Appreciation Society.
How many of those dinners are actually good?
Well, they're not good.
Maybe 25%.
They're not good. But this is the thing. It's like they're not good by our standards. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that dinner at Bomonte's is anything like, you know, what you could get at Roberta's or Topos or whatever, you know, but it's just not. But I don't know that it's necessarily fair that we judge every single restaurant by the same criteria. You know, there's something majestic about sitting in an old room and appreciating your dining history and knowing that this is where you come from and just appreciating it for something else. Atmosphere, old waiters, tuxedos, you know, white tablecloths and shitty Chianti.
Bomonte's
is an example, and I love Bomonte's.
Wait, is it expensive?
It's expensive.
I mean, it's.
I've only
been
there once.
It's not carbon expensive.
No, it's not expensive. But you, I mean, look, you could go there. If you
it's
go
not
there
cheap
and you eat, you, it's like, you know, you spend $100 for two people with terrible wine, terrible food, and stuff that's chromatic. I mean, look, I totally agree with what you're saying. The issue is that, like, I think there's a choice by those restaurants to do. I mean, I'm sure at one point Bomonte's was phenomenal.
Well, Mores have outpaced what they're producing. I mean,
Peter Luger's has not dropped in its quality.
But Peter Luger's is searing steaks. I mean, Bomonte's was
and
always
creaming
doing that.
Spinach.
And making good
fair
hamburgers.
Enough.
And, good
and hamburgers.
Putting out bread baskets. That's way too much bread when you're about to eat that much steak.
I mean, but have you ever had anything else at Peter Luger?
Hamburger.
Other than hamburger. I've had the bacon.
It's the steak bacon, on
the
a
bacon.
Bun.
Bacon's great.
Bacon, hamburger, steak, french fries, and cream spinach. But, I mean, have you ever
on
had...
On the other end of the argument, there's only so many restaurants that have been around as that long. Restaurants don't last forever, Jordana, so...
Oh, we got pizza down.
There's only a handful that are open that have been around for 120 years, so not everything's going to last. Things cycle through.
I agree.
And the food at a lot of these restaurants for the dining society that you and Robert put on, the food is mediocre, and sometimes that's not going to... The food at Bill's was not good. It was fun, and we had a great time there, but the food's not great, and sometimes, you know, restaurants... with shitty food aren't going to last forever.
I mean, so there's talk now of John DeLucy like taking over the King Cole Bar, which I don't know the details of that deal, and I also don't want to slander John. But you know,
again. I don't want to continue to slander.
So. Well, yeah. I'm not going to, you know, in the sense that I don't know the details of it, and so it's not something I can really comment on. But you know, that
but
is
comment away. You
but
will.
That's you know that's the, I mean, this is an example of exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, the King Cole Bar. You know, was, you know, an absolutely magical place. I mean, it was just majestic. It was gorgeous. I mean, you know, or it's like having a drink at the Oak Room or something. You know, it's just, they're so beautiful and it's moving. It's moving to be in a space that's been around that long and that has that much history. And I don't know that I would enjoy it anymore just because my old fashioned doesn't have a neon fucking cherry in it. You know?
That's not the issue. I mean, the issue is just that, like, some of these restaurants, they're just not good anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, rewarding that type of...
Are you upset about the fact that, like, that they're disappearing or that someone is, like, going in and pretending that it used to be that, but they're just, like, selling back nostalgia?
A little bit of
like,
both.
Like, would you be
I think
better if they just went in, gutted it, and just made it something totally different?
No. Although I do think there are restaurants that I think have been... Minetta savvy did it. In preservation. I think Minetta did an excellent job at it.
Probably one of the best.
Excellent. I think that the Dim Sum Place.
Namwa
Tea Parlor did a fantastic job.
Monkey Bar. Yeah. I mean, you can still feel the presence of the room there.
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, look, they didn't touch that front
room. I'll put it this way. If someone came in, and I've said this before, if someone came in and did an overhaul for Bimonti's, if they just put in a new, they don't have to change anything. Just literally change the food coming out of the kitchen.
Like a Mission Chinese setup.
Yeah, come in, just do Italian food, or do any sort of good food that come out of there. Don't change the decor. Would you be happy with that?
I'd have to experience it and tell you. I mean, some of it is a feeling. It's a feeling. I hate to tell you, but like the feeling that I get when I'm sitting in Minetta Tavern, where I had a lovely meal with Damien, his wife Rami, and Daniel on Christmas. And
what, no invite?
No, we thought you.
I
would,
just didn't
we
write
thought,
back to the email.
We thought you would ruin it.
But wait! If you think about this, but Monty's been around for so long. You think they'd have all that time to really hone the food, like get it amazing? You know,
because dehoned.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I think there's a way you could come in, have the same menu, but just make you know, make it sparkle a little bit more.
Yeah, and what if they put out just like, you know, 15 dishes where they like they really knew how to make, like I was just at Tasting Kitchen in California and they, you know, they're a relatively new restaurant and they put out the pasta is one of their main focuses and they had like 10 or 12 different types of pasta, some I hadn't recognized, and they were great. They were not born while Bimonti's were still like running.
All right, Bimonti's or any of those places, let's just assume that when they got started for the being around, they weren't using canned vegetables. They weren't using, you know, they were using good ingredients.
I don't entirely agree with that. I think that the culture has changed. I think that there was a time when the best French restaurants in Midtown all used canned and not fresh ingredients because they were getting it all imported from Europe. That was considered fine dining.
The issue with changing the menus at those places too is that there's so many regulars there, and if you try to overhaul a menu or update it to what we thought was better food, there would be a ton of regulars that wouldn't be cool with that and would be like,
oh, I mean, but that being said, Bimonti's was packed. When I went there, last time I was there, it was absolutely packed.
Packed. Yeah. And when
Bill's was doing okay too,
right? Oh, Bill's was yeah, that was...
What was the reason why?
That's another, I'm not going to slander John DeLucy conversation.
Well, from what I heard, the
again,
owner,
add it to the top time. Of the pile. Of
well, this isn't slander against him. This is almost in defense of him. What I heard is that the owner of the building wanted something different and didn't want the current owner like running that restaurant and like the idea of John coming in, and I think John's a nice guy. I've met him a few times and he's always been very friendly.
The owner
of the building. I mean, I'm just gonna tell you, I don't want to even address it. That's not. It's bad. It's much worse than that.
Well, that's what I heard, but you might have heard something different.
Anyway, let's move on from.
I mean, to think about those things about changes. You know, I was out in Long Island City the other day, and I drove past the old MWell spot, which is currently empty. And has been empty.
Yeah.
And it's just one of the things where it's just like all these, and that's a landlord issue.
That was an amazing building.
I mean, that was an amazing building, and then it was perfect, and they did a great job of keeping that diner feel and updating it. But it's just like, what people are seeing now is that and why people are actually leaving New York is because landlords are getting greedy. I mean,
totally.
You're seeing a lot of issues with that where they want more money, and a lot of times it's really backfiring.
Mm-hmm. But it's like, if PS1 didn't like revitalize that neighborhood in the way that they thought it was going to, M. Wells isn't going to be the thing that jumpstarts it. It would only make things more attractive to have a restaurant like that out there. Now it's a limited amount of time you can go there. There's not many people out there.
Well, they're opening up a new spot.
Lunchtime only.
Yeah. They're opening up that new steak spot, right?
Yeah, I don't know when that's happening, but that's the...
But do you know what I'm saying?
But the other thing with that, I mean, that's a special case. Didn't they sign a one-year lease? I mean...
Of course. That's... Okay, fine. They signed a one-year lease, but that being said, it's just like... Maybe there was a 3% cost of living increase in there. Like, the guy saw the success and got greedy.
Totally. Sure.
Yeah. You know? And I mean, seeing what the prices were versus, and what they were serving at M. Wells, like, they probably weren't making a ton of money. Right, Shades?
Let's talk about Damien's hot dogs.
You make hot dogs?
We've already talked about those.
Coca-Cola relish.
Yeah, I did hot dogs. Well, yeah, I like hot dogs. I mean, I was raised on crappy, you know, comfort food. But yeah, I did hot dogs.
What was your brand growing up?
Well, Dinty Moore was big in the game in my house. Swanson Frozen, I guess, sous vide, the original sous vide.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Oscar Mayer Kraft. Pillsbury.
We were Heber National. Heber National?
Of course. Yeah, I mean, higher power.
There was no Heber National right where I grew up in Colorado.
What national? what?
That's
Heber,
New York. I used
to love Lender's Bagels.
No, you didn't.
I had one of those.
No, you did not.
When I was younger, yeah.
Full Shonda.
That's a Shonda.
Full Shonda.
I didn't grow up in New York. We didn't have
that. I don't know that word, Shonda.
It is actually pretty far from New York.
It is. He only knew one Jew.
I knew no Jews growing up.
I know a couple.
I know. When I met Damien, he asked if I had horns.
Yeah, and I said, do you have a tail?
Yeah, please.
The difference.
So wait.
Hey, please don't slander Damien.
What was the answer?
It was a tail.
So wait. So you grew up in your hot dog. Your hot dog game sounds pretty tight.
My hot dog game is tight, but I got it real tight when I started getting into food. In the past couple of years, I did a hot dog thing for Complex Magazine, or First We Feast, rather, and I basically sous vide hot dogs with like. Red Stripe beer and red miso and Benton's bacon and all this stuff, and I just kind of went over the top to make like the best hot dog that I could make. I think I can make.
You weren't making that like a hot dog. You were just cooking it in a fancy way, right?
I was trying to add as much flavor as I could into it and use all these techniques that I've read about. I collect cookbooks, so I'm always trying to step up my cooking skills. But it was really good. I had friends over. I think Jordana and Daniel were there. They enjoyed my hot dog.
What was the best one?
Well,
there was
one.
Just the one. I mean, Damien in general is a very ambitious cook, and he hosts amazing dinners.
Oh, thank you for the invite.
Yeah.
Well,
a lot of stuff coming out here. You know, I always see you on Instagram, all of you hanging out and going like, oh, I guess my phone is... Oh, no, my phone is working.
Yeah.
My phone is working.
Yeah, well, no, I've been lucky. I've been able to host some cool dinners in my house.
I've heard.
Alex Dubak cook. Laurent Grand might be coming next month to cook at my house.
Cool. I'm around.
Well, Darren, you're in my neighborhood. But next time I see you walking your dog, you got to say hi to me.
Well, I didn't. Were you driving?
No, I was walking. I don't drive.
Oh.
I can drive. I just never owned a car.
So you all do stuff for First We Feast.
Occasionally, yeah.
Daniel, I just saw something of yours with the best Instagram food photos.
Yeah, I did a little thing. Just like my favorite.
I guess because my food didn't make it. Is that it?
Oh, we're getting
once again.
My favorite
really
like,
combative.
My favorite
guys.
15 Instagram Shonda. Food photos from the past week. But just speaking on hot dogs, I had these. I think it's just Brooklyn Hot Dog Company. I bought from Court Street Grocers and I brought to a barbecue. They were freaking awesome.
Oh, I was talking to the guy that owns that company. Yeah, they're good.
What'd you say, babe?
I put them at that barbecue.
You didn't come. You were invited to it. I almost said you weren't invited.
The last weekend?
No, yeah, it was this
You're
last
juicing.
Weekend.
You're juicing.
You were juicing, yeah.
You were juicing.
Those hot dogs were...
Putting a hot dog in a blender, does that count?
They were pretty awesome, though. You know what
I'm saying? Yeah, I've had them. They're delicious.
Well, here's my question, and this sort of goes back to what we're talking about old stuff. Like, growing up, like, even as good as Huey National was, it mm-hmm. like, who knows what was actually in that. But now with, like, all the artisanal hot dogs, at what point does it become, like, more than a hot dog.
I don't know.
More than a hot dog.
That should be their tagline.
More than a hot dog.
We're more than a hot dog.
Well, I
no
actually.
No more lips and assholes.
I have strong feelings about this.
Go on. Go on.
Wait, by the way, we should just.
That could be the name of your bio,
be the
Strong
last
Feelings.
Tunes, and we can just. Next week, it'll just be Strong Feelings with Jordana Rothman.
I heard that John DeLucci is taking over Hebrew National.
Oh.
Jordana, what are you
I remember
doing?
The first time
that,
I had a pork hot dog.
I think that most artisanal hot dogs. Are not snappy enough. Snap is very important to me. Hebrew National has lovely snap.
Those Jewish footlongs have delicious snap.
I also actually think like there's nothing better than it on a just like a charcoal or even like a gas grill. That's just like the best that hot dogs can be.
Yeah.
Better than you know any fancy restaurant hot dog.
I mean,
I don't like fancy restaurant hot dogs.
Yeah, I mean that's sort of
keep your hot dogs.
Because I know that hamburgers obviously have gone above and beyond just the like insane gourmetness.
Yeah.
But I feel like hot dogs will never get to the level because I think hot dogs are still just stuck in the.
Well, you know what it is? You know what my opinion on that matter is?
Oh,
is,
you have an opinion about something?
Is that, hamburgers, you know, they're seasoned with salt and pepper, but they're not seasoned. You know, it's still sort of like a canvas for. You know,
topping.
Chefly accoutrement.
Yeah.
Whereas a hot dog is by nature sort of like a seasoned item.
Right.
So I feel like there's
smoky.
Less room. Yeah, there's less room, I think, for articulation
but
of it.
I've been to hot dogs in Chicago. They do like
awesome.
Dogs with like foie and all this stuff. I mean, it is awesome, but, you know, I agree with Jordana. There's nothing really beats like just a standard hot dog and charcoal grill. I mean, except for my hot dog, of course.
Well,
but
at some point, a hot dog.
Damien's hot dog was really good.
It becomes a sausage. You know?
Kind of.
When does a hot dog become a sausage?
That's a good question.
Age 13.
Yeah. I mean, that's like if a tree falls in the wood type of question. I mean, at some point it crosses over. They're sort of the same thing.
A hot dog is a sausage. I think that's sort
of But
that's
what I'm saying.
I just believe there's a lot of sausage makers rolling over on the grill.
No, yeah, a hot dog is it's a specific kind of sausage with a certain kind of flavoring and smoke or whatever.
Yeah.
Sausages are bigger, aren't they?
No.
Well, it's not the size of the sausage. It's the snap of the hot dog.
Is a chorizo a sausage? Is chorizo sausage?
Yes.
They're
this big. Does that make them not a sausage?
No, they pack a lot of punch for being a
sausage. Meat Hook makes them this big.
It's the flavor that counts.
So, summer's coming to an end. What can we be looking forward to in the fall? What do you see? What are you excited about?
Oh gosh! Well,
Ivan Ramen.
That's right, Ivan Ramen.
Yeah, I'm excited to try that.
Yeah, he's gonna. Do you think that they're gonna be Corona type lines for the Ivan Ramen?
Oh my god, yes, for sure.
At least in the beginning. I mean, who knows what it tastes like?
I've tasted it.
We've had it.
Yeah,
I've had it.
Good.
Darren and I ate it together. We invited each other.
Thanks for the invite, Darren.
I had to bring Jamie.
That was before they were dating.
Yeah.
It was awkward.
So, what? Ivan Ramen, what else? What else is coming?
You know, this is the first year since I'm not working at Time Out New York anymore that I don't have to follow fall previewing. So, I'm kind of like looking forward to unwrapping it like Christmas morning this fall. I'm not like.
Danny's opening up a new place.
Oh, the Mexican?
It's not Mexican.
What is it?
I don't know what it is.
Was that just a rumor?
No. He's opening up a new place, but I don't know if anybody knows what it is yet. Yeah. I'm sure people do. But
well, I will say a new place that we're really excited about that isn't coming this fall but is already open and by fall will be fully formed and ready for public consumption is Estella, the Ignacio Matos place, which is fantastic, like jaw-scraping the floor, so good. I had to excuse myself from my dinner mates in the middle of dinner to hide in the bathroom and tweet. It was that good.
Wow.
What were you doing in the bathroom?
I had to tweet.
we actually had them on.
I tweeted a little bit right at the table, actually.
We had them on the show talk about it. It's amazing. It was great.
It's just phenomenal. It's so good. I mean, there really wasn't a misstep. It was so good.
It's nice to go to a place where, you know, you could just feel that they had a vision and executed it perfectly, and it's just really nice.
Yeah.
Funny, too. You know, I trust him in that space. Not a lot of, I don't know if, I wouldn't follow a lot of chefs to that particular stretch of Houston Street, you know, but Ignacio.
Where is it?
It's on Houston between Mott and Mulberry, so it's just
by
sort
that
of
big old Navy sign that's always there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like the
it's just that, you know, it's by the Puck Building. Nothing.
There's really no.
There really isn't. It's right above Botanica.
Like the best, he can kind of say he's got the best restaurant on Houston Street.
Except for Katz's.
Yeah.
Right.
What about Dos Caminos?
Is there a Dos Caminos?
Yes,
oh,
there
right
is.
On the other side. And Pegu Club.
And Pegu Club.
Okay. And Francois Paillard Bakery.
And what's that Jamaican place?
Miss Lily.
Are you guys literally going to name restaurants
on the street?
There's a Subway.
Do we need to wrap this show up? We run out of things.
No, Daniel can tell. Daniel and I once stole a pastrami sandwich from Katz's when we first started dating.
We did.
You stole.
Did you smuggle it in your stomach?
We stole it. It was.
He hid it under the back of his T-shirt.
You know how they give you the ticket, and you have to return the ticket before you leave.
Yeah.
Well, they only gave us. They made a mistake and only gave us one ticket.
No, they didn't mark. They didn't mark either of our tickets when we ordered food.
Oh, they didn't mark either of our tickets, so was that it? I don't know.
Okay, well, I'm obviously just going to tell the story. Okay. But they didn't mark our tickets.
She has strong feelings about
this. And Daniel and I were like, we realized what had happened, and we were like, oh, my God, we could get away with this whole thing. So Daniel went up and ordered, like, a second pastrami sandwich at the counter, and I left with my unmarked ticket, and then I stood, like, looking between the salamis on Houston Street watching him, and I was like so nervous because I'd like never stolen anything before.
I don't like
my
you saying you're looking in between salamis.
Well, get used to it, buddy.
I'm on the street looking through salamis. Alright, are you excited for any restaurants?
I mean, again, I love Mission Chinese, and so whatever this restaurant Danny's going to open, I'm definitely excited about. I want to check out the new bar that Andy Ricker's going to open up. I'm not sure what type of food. I'm sure there'll be some food.
It's called Waiting for Pock Pock, right?
That's a good one.
There's that new quality Italian just opened. Yeah. I like quality meat. So
I like
quality
too. Is that Craig Koketsu?
Yeah, I want to try to go there this week.
Did you see the chicken parmesan pizza?
Yeah, look crazy.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's like this big.
So where was it?
It's not a pizza.
At Quality Italian.
It's literally.
Wait, is it open already?
Yeah, it's open.
It's a chicken parm, like a 12-inch breaded chicken thing with like sauce and cheese on top.
Yeah.
You need to explain this to me. Did you understand?
Yeah, got it.
Me?
So it's not a pizza. They're calling it a chicken parm pizza.
Okay.
But there's no dough. The dough is a chicken parm. It's like a giant chicken parm.
Okay, can I just say something about this? Can I just say that when Quality Italian does a fried chicken dough, we're all like, oh, it's brilliant. When KFC does it, it's like the most disgusting example.
Did anyone use the B word?
No, but it's just.
I'm just saying they're doing
this. It's just a Paillard that's pounded out to pizza size. There's no. They're not. Do they call it a pizza? I thought it's just their chicken.
I think they call
parm.
It chicken parm pizza.
I think it's
maybe
just chicken
maybe
parm.
Maybe it's parm.
Do we see the corollary that I'm
we
making
got it.
Here?
I don't
see the corollary.
I don't understand.
We ate the. Remember, we ate the KFC double down at Joe Beef in Montreal.
We did.
We did have that. We had that together.
We had it. Oh God, we had it twice.
We didn't eat it at.
We had it twice.
It was too much.
Yeah. We had it. Daniel and I had it once together, and then we invited Darren to join us.
It was too
be our
much.
Third.
But it was pretty delicious.
Eat a double down.
We didn't eat the whole thing. You just taste that.
I would say that the one place I ate last night was Shalom Japan.
Oh, how was it?
Oh yeah.
The food was good. We'll put that the food was good. Period. Like that's fine. I have an issue with the place that is like supposed to be combining Jewish and Japanese food.
Why?
That does because it didn't do it well.
Okay.
It like kind of landed there was somewhere in the middle where it's like there's that place Bistro Petit near our
so
house
good.
Which
yeah.
is like French food with a Korean chef, and like subtly it's like French food run through a Korean filter, but he's not saying anything about that. When you go like Bistro or when you go like Shalom Japan, I'm thinking it's like 50-50 on the plate, you know.
Can you give us an example of a...
There was a chicken stuffed with... it was
matzo.
Like a chicken... No.
Ugh. That's not true.
That's only on the lamb Passover.
Chicken
no,
Kiev?
But essentially it was a chicken that was like underneath the skin was pastrami and it was served with like potatoes or something. And it was like fine, but it was just... I was like, okay, I get it. But nothing was so over the top.
What's
like
Japanese
stuff-
yeah,
about that?
Where's the Japanese element? Was it katsu?
No, it was just like
was a yakitori.
No, it was like a. It was just a chicken.
So it was chicken and pastrami. That's
exactly.
not Japanese.
That's what I'm saying. And then they had the lox bowl, but I didn't get it because I knew that what it would be would just be like lox on like it would be like a
rice.
Like and it was like oh, yeah. So it's like the it's like we here's an idea and the tagline is great, authentic and authentically Jewish and Japanese food. Great tagline, concept is good. But it's just like, unless you're going to go like half and half and really understood, there was no brisket on the menu.
Well, so you really have to.
There was no like noodles on the menu or anything.
Yeah.
That there's just like, there was nothing on. They had a challah with like a like maple raisin thing. And like, nothing.
How was that?
Where is
here's the thing. All the food was really good.
Isn't this, he used to work at Mile End.
Yeah.
And, then,
And Teresi.
All right.
Where's the restaurant?
It's on 4th, South 4th and Keep. So I think so. The food was great. Like, the food, if I had just gone, I was like, oh, there's this place, this is their food.
Right.
That's fine. But they, like, tried to up themselves, and if that was the goal, I don't think it was a success.
I think in cases like that, you really have to, like, intellectually digest the concept before you kind of,
it's
you
like
really
that,
have to.
The thing on all, like, the, like, Top Chef, things like that, where they present it in a certain box, and then they go, if you just would have not presented it in that box,
right,
you would have been fine, but you made us think that we were going to get something else.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
And then that's the thing. So, again, if you're around there, the food is good, it's not that expensive, I think. But, like, their cocktail, like, just everything, it wasn't really one way or the other, or it was just, like, even if it had been, like, menu that was, like, a really well-executed Japanese dish and a really well-executed Jewish dish, but, like, the mashup, like, I don't feel like there's a strong understanding of both cultures to create a new type of dish.
Yeah. I should have done, like, a brisket sushi roll.
I mean, fine. But, I mean, but they also, but they kind of do that at Red Farm, you know what I'm saying? Like, the pastrami, like, they already did, and that is, like, a much better execution than... You know,
have you guys eaten at the new King Noodle place?
Yes.
How is that?
It's good. It's really nice, like Asian pop food.
And that was Roberta's chef, right?
Uh huh.
That went there.
It was good. They do this like kimchi carbonara with Doritos. It's crazy.
How about the Elm?
I'm just gonna say, how about that Elm?
I haven't been there yet.
Been there twice.
Have you enjoyed it?
Food is good. It's expensive.
The food is really quite good. It's an interesting...
I would hope it's good. It's Paula Brandt.
It's good. It's a little pricey.
It'll be interesting to see how that plays
it's
out
expensive.
There. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out there because I think he's a really interesting case. I mean, he's such a classic fine dining haute cuisine chef. And I feel like, you know, the whole culture has changed. The mores have changed in New York City. The pendulum has swung. And, you know, there's not room necessarily for what he's doing at the moment. People aren't paying that kind of money for food or they're not looking for that fine dining experience. And so he's kind of, I think there's a certain shoehorn element where he's trying to kind of meet the demands of the culture. And I think, you know, in a certain respect, he does it very well. And the food is beautiful. But I don't necessarily know that I wish he didn't have to. You know, I wish he didn't have to do that.
Do what?
I wish he didn't have to try and be have a casual restaurant.
Yeah, but
he's not
saying,
a casual chef.
But he was saying that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to have an outlet so that he could create food that it's not just to that specific crowd that would go have that super fine dining experience. He said that that's what, you know, that's
and
his own choice.
He's creating, you know, a restaurant within a restaurant with 8 seats.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where he's going to do that high end stuff.
It just opened, I think. Little Elm, they're calling it.
Oh.
Chef's counter.
Aww.
Sapling.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, I guess it's kind of the ultimate question. I mean, if Williamsburg supports that restaurant, can it? Will it? I don't know.
I don't think it's going to have to rely completely on Williamsburg because it's a hotel.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a restaurant in there before there was a hotel.
Yeah,
but that restaurant.
Wait, did you go? It was good.
No, it was
Pillar and Plow.
It was open and it was
closed. Yeah, that's because King and Grove came in and they bought the hotel and they just shut it down immediately. It was a shame. It was a good restaurant. The guy was from Joel Robichaud. I mean, the food was good.
I mean, what are they doing poolside for food, though? Because they're obviously not serving, like, Elm-style dishes.
Yeah.
Is he doing...
And breakfast. They do breakfast every morning, too.
Is he doing poolside service?
They have a pool menu. It's not like chicken Kiev by the pool.
No, it'd be amazing.
I take a nice light swim and have some chicken Kiev.
No, I want tweezer food by the pool.
They have like a bar menu. It's like it's mellow. I don't know what it is, but...
No, we can go there.
I mean, I guess it's like, what is casual food now? I mean,
Cronut.
I walked away asking that question kind of. Yeah,
meatball
I mean,
shop.
I mean, meatball the food shop, there, definitely. It's more rustic, certainly, than Corton. It's definitely, the atmosphere is certainly more casual. But, and you know, the food, the entrees are sort of the kind of family style in these big copper pots. And, you know, and I suppose, you know, there's a rusticity there for sure. Is it casual? I mean, it's a... You know, the chicken Kiev is this, like, gorgeous, you know, burnished roulade of poultry. And
it's well burnished.
So, guys, is it expensive there?
It's a little pricey.
Like, is it carbone expensive?
It's like, you
no,
go
it's
there. Here's the thing. The menu is split into 4 parts. And, like, the first 3 parts, it's, like, not entree size. And they're, like, $30 dishes. So they're kind of, like, large appetizers. And then the to share ones, you could really eat those dishes by yourself, and those are like between $50 and $60 a pop.
That's
so
really expensive.
It's expensive. It's for Williamsburg, it's the most expensive.
We're almost out of time here. So let's just say it's August. What do you guys got planned to finish out this summer?
I'm going to wait online for a cronut tomorrow.
how long would you actually wait? If you didn't have an in, how long would you wait for a cronut?
I wouldn't.
Well, I don't wait on lines.
Did you ignore the first part of my question? I said if you didn't have an in and you were going to wait online, how
long? I didn't say I had an in.
She said she wouldn't. She wouldn't wait online.
You guys are ruining this closing question. It's not unique to the Corona. I just don't wait online. So my answer is zero minutes. I don't like waiting online.
Okay. I love waiting online. Sometimes I'll just wait on a line. When I get to the front, I just leave.
Yeah. I mean, I wait in line sometimes, but I wouldn't wait in line for that. I mean, it's really awesome, but I wouldn't wait in line for a fucking donut.
I'm so happy that this is how I got to experience my first Corona. I never thought I would actually.
Yeah, zero effort.
It was supposed to be a surprise for everyone, and ultimately it was only a surprise for you.
Oh. I'd wait half an hour.
You'd wait half an hour?
Half an hour?
You'd do half an hour?
This is how you
well, to close out the summer, Deanna's going to Hong Kong. I'm going to Martha's Vineyard.
And Japan.
I'm going around the world, DJing. I'm human package. FedExing myself.
We have our last barbecue coming up August 13th. Jamie Bissonette's cooking.
What day of the week is that?
It's a Tuesday.
Oh, shit. I'd definitely go to that.
August 13th.
Where at? In Williamsburg?
Yeah. You're all invited.
Is it at Hope Lounge?
I can't go.
Good company. It's officially on the record. They are all invited.
Oh, do you guys throw those Hope Lounge barbecues?
That's us.
Mark Vetri did one?
Yeah, it's ours.
Sam Mason did one a long time ago? Oh, that's you guys. Yeah. How's that one? That's good.
Yeah.
Good shit.
So it's BBQ Blowout August.eventbrite.com. Dr. Sussman is DJing. So are the Food Republic guys.
Wrap it up. Take us out.
We're going to Stockholm for one of our barbecues in
August.
Not
wrapping it up. This is adding more information. Wrap it up. Take us out.
Wait, you guys are doing a barbecue in Stockholm?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. We're going to do all dill everything. Well, you guys want to give nuts and bolts for like Twitter and things or Instagram?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Daniel, never pass him a chance to promote.
I love myself.
Daniel's wearing a Daniel Krieger Photography t-shirt right now.
I brought my t-shirt.
I wore my Daniel Krieger thong. I'm facebook.com/dieselboy, twitter.com/DJDieselboy.
I am Smooth Dude on Instagram and Twitter, SMOOTHDUDE.
Like it sounds.
I'm new car smell. That's NEWCAR. And Jordana?
On Instagram and Twitter, I'm just at Jordana Rothman. Jordana Rothman.
Well, I want to thank you.
Oh, wait, no. And I'm at Ruthie the Riveter on all potential social metrics.
Ruthka.
Ruthka.
Well, thank you so much. We'll be back next week with some more food and music. We're going to close it out with the last few minutes of Beyond the Black Baseline.
Just rolls off the tongue. There it is. I like how you say that very poorly.
I didn't name it. I just got to say it.
You said it.
You should listen to it at the gym. It's really good to work out to. Thank you.
Is it?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I play squash.
Shed those cronuts right off.
Yeah. All right. And thank you to Dominique. Congratulations on, I guess, having the top food.
Just wrap it up. No more information.
So if we could take a few more. Here we go. Thank you so much. Shout out to Roberta. Shout out to Heritage as always. See you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.